Yes, the intense heat of the 1950s, which puts us in mind of Olive Muriel Pink. Now, if you live in Alice Springs, you'll certainly have heard of Olive Muriel Pink. She was a trailblazer who founded Australia's first arid zone flora reserve in the Alice back in the 1950s. After her death in 1975, when she was 91, the reserve was renamed the Olive Pink Botanic Gardens, and it's a very nice place indeed. Well, Miss Pink, as she was known, was unrelenting in her pursuit of justice. She took up the cause of Aboriginal land rights. She was a botanical illustrator as well. And she became a bit of an anthropologist, actually. Now she's the subject of a play, which is on at the Darwin Festival, which is currently running. It's called The First Garden. It's co-written by husband and wife team Christopher and Natasha Raja. Natasha also plays Olive Pink in the show. And Chris and Natasha live in Alice Springs, but they join us today from the ABC studios in Darwin. Welcome to you both.
Hi. Thanks, Michael.
Nice to have you here. Chris, tell us, who was Olive Pink?
I think you described her in one. She was this incredible woman who did lots of different things, including anthropology, fighting for Aboriginal people's land rights, someone who was very interested in desert landscapes and native flora and fauna. She was well ahead of her time, and she was also someone who challenged the establishment.
Yeah, she fell out with many people in the anthropology business, didn't she?
She did. She seemed to fall out with lots and lots of people, so she was a great subject to write about.
She's a little bit like Daisy Bates in that regard.
She knew Daisy Bates, and she was a bit like Daisy Bates in that regard, but I think we'll find that her work goes much deeper than that. Of Daisy's, she was a prolific writer, and there's so much of her information that some of it is accessible in the National Archives, but also some of it is secret, because at some point she realised that she did not want to publish tribal secrets.
She knew that from the start, or it was a protocol or a concern that dawned on her as time went by?
Michael, I think like so many of us, I think it takes time to realise
the significance of what she was discovering and what they were telling her, I suppose.
Yes.
So Natasha, tell us about the botanic gardens in Alice Springs. How did that all come about?
Well, we spent a lot of time in the gardens with our children, and I mean, it's just such a beautiful place to be. And we'd heard so many stories of Olive Pink. Crazy stories, and often quite horrible, you know. And she hated children, and she shot at planes,
and she did like half casts.
Yeah, and you know,
now, let's take these one at a time. Hang on. She shot at planes.
Yeah.
What do you mean she shot? How do you mean she shot at planes?
She thought the planes were flying unusually low over where she stayed, and she was under the impression they were perving on her in the bathtub.
Right.
So she wrote many letters to the airline suggesting that they...
Change the flight course.
Change, yeah.
I think if a plane is unusually low, that's a very good reason not to shoot at it. Not that there's ever a good reason to shoot at a plane, but that doesn't seem...
She wrote letters as well to the administrator and various people asking for the flight course, the path to be changed.
And they did actually respond, didn't they? They sent her back a letter saying, we can either move Mount Gillen, re-divert the Todd River, or shoot Miss Pink. And that's actually in writing in the archives for us all.
Well, she did make lots of enemies, didn't she? I mean, she was tough. I guess that's the thing about her. She was tough, wasn't she?
She sure was. And that just made her such a brilliant character for a play, because she was tough and strong, but she had her flaws. And that makes her so human.
Yeah. So let's talk about these botanic gardens that she set up and how that came about. So in 1955, she applied to the Northern Territory Administrator for a reservation of about 20 hectares of land on the eastern bank of the Todd River, which she wanted to set up as a flora reserve. What were the events that had brought her to want that?
Well, curiously enough, tough times. She came out to the territory around 1930, around early 1930s, and she basically upset by the Cornerstone Massacre. She had read about it, and she felt deeply moved and she wanted to do something. And she came out there with a fiery ambition to do something and stick up for the Aboriginal people at a time when not many people were. Over time, she got squashed literally by a lot of people, and she started to realise it was something that was possibly beyond her.
Well, she was a woman, she was alone, she was unmarried, and she didn't actually have an anthropology degree. She did a few courses and she was very knowledgeable. But when her funds died out, the funding stopped coming and she realised she could no longer do it.
I mean, she pretty much had no place to stay. When she was given this land,
she was 70.
She was 70. She was 70 when she actually started this garden. She was an old lady, but she was must have been extremely tough. And with the help of a Walpri gardener on Arunda land, because the old people liked her, both the Arunda people and the Walpri people, and she was very keen to help them. And with the help of this Walpri man, Johnny Jumper Jimper, together they built this Flora Reserve.
So the play plays homage to her life, and you actually designed it to be performed in the gardens in Alice Springs. Just tell us about the setup for the play.
Yes, well, it was initially done as a site-specific play for the Olive Pink Botanic Garden, and in the last year we've developed it into a touring touring play, a touring production, and at the same time it was picked up by Currency Press, our publisher. The play itself...
Well, basically, we've worked it now so that it can be performed in any garden anywhere in Australia or the world.
Yes, the world. Let's say we can perform it anywhere. Let's describe the set.
Yes,
so
on
stage, we've got a couple of trees at the front. You've got a tent, which is her tent. And you really you describe the setting as... Well, as the garden. So you want whoever stages this to really recreate a garden. You actually want several trees on stage.
Well, I mean, whoever takes it on, I guess that, you know, that would be the
In the production we have, we've built a flat pack. I mean, we've used a lot of territory ingenuity here, Michael. We've built a flat pack, we've got a tree, an ironwood tree on stage. We've got three plant rows. We've got Mount Gillin.
There's river gums and there's 8-gallon drums full of plants. So whoever directs the first garden really does need to create a garden, I suppose.
We have a terrific director who's already done that. And we've brought the gardens with us to this George Brown Tropical Botanic Garden in Darwin.
It's beautiful.
On Books and Arts Daily, we're talking about the play The First Garden with the two people who've put it together. Who are Natasha Raja and her husband Christopher Raja. Their play is part of the Darwin Festival. Now, Natasha, you're going to perform a little bit of us. The play opens with Olive Pink speaking Walpuri, which is one of the languages of that area. Can you perform that section for us?
Sure. So the play opens with Olive entering upstage carrying a dead goanna, basically.
Yua! Nyujaraju! Pradangajalu! Pradanana, Wanadi, Winadi, Lajajana, Lani Jani Jana.
Which translates as, "Hey, you mob, listen to me. I caught a lizard over by the waterhole. I was frightened."
How did you learn to speak Walpuri? That sounds very convincing. I'm not a Walpuri speaker, so I'm not sure how good you are at it, but how did you learn that?
Well, we have a lot of Walpuri friends. A lot of people helped us along the way. We actually had... four different Walpuri translations. And since after the during the process of getting the script ready for publication, we realised we had to select one of them that had that wasn't obviously...
Michael, we live in the Gap in Alice Springs, and we often hear a lot of negative things that happen there, but it's also an extremely creative part of Australia, and this exchange between Walpuri, Arunda and various people.
But it was also really important for me to have language in the play.
Yes.
You know, when you're exploring a culture, it's such a huge part of it.
Well,
and Olive Pink could speak Walpuri and Arunda too.
Mm,
how did she learn to speak those two languages. So she spoke Walpuri and Aranda, did she?
Yes, I think it was taking time and
she spent years living with them. And she hunted with them and lived as they would live.
I think there was a recognition that Australia is a place where there's great diversity in language, and it was taking the time and effort to find that out. And for us, that's been part of our journey as well, recognising the diversity of Australian languages. One of the reasons why I love living in the Gap in Alice Springs is hearing the diversity of languages. Mm. Sorry, it's something I get very passionate about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spent about 5 years working on communities, mainly with the Pitjantjatjara. So I picked up Pitjantjatjara quite quickly, and I'd never spoken Walpuri before, but in terms of Aboriginal language, it wasn't as challenging as you would imagine, because I was already familiar with the sounds mm-hmm. and the curls of how to speak it, even though I was always much better at understanding what they were saying as opposed to speaking it.
Natasha, the play makes several mentions of Olive's status as a single white female living in the Alice. How did that fact shape her standing in the community?
Well, it was in that era, it was unusual. She was very outlandish and very outspoken, and she didn't live like normal women, good Christian women lived.
Because she's on her own, you mean?
Yeah.
And associating so freely with the local Aboriginal people.
Well, absolutely. She was alone, and she wasn't. She was with Aboriginal man Johnny Jumper Jimper.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she was.
And she was often surrounded by younger men, and they took to her. She was very she was a smart, intelligent woman, and you know, people. Whilst many people attacked her and called her names, she had some incredible supporters, like people like Ted Egan, Henry Wardlaw, Paul Hasluck.
We've tried to make her relationships really drive the play and come through the play, because, yes, she was alone, but I mean, this is a woman who received over 100 Christmas cards every year, so she wasn't a loner. She had wonderful relationships, and
we've tried to just make her human and flesh this character out, and this is a fictional play as well. I mean,
Can I ask you what seems to be an important question about this play, and that is, to what extent are you wholeheartedly celebrating her and her worldview? To what extent is this play a vehicle for her ideas, pure and simple? And to what extent are you distancing yourself from her? And are there ways in which you think she...
I'm proud of what she stood for, and I think it's a wonderful platform to discuss these issues, because even though it's an old story and it was 60 years ago, a lot of these issues are still quite relevant today.
But she could come across as a meddler and a do-gooder, couldn't she? Someone who knew best for everybody, black or white, regardless of what they thought. Isn't that side to it?
Possibly in the context of that era. But nowadays... I think we encourage opinion, and we encourage women to have an opinion, and it's her views. The subject matter of the play is it's definitely a vehicle.
It is a vehicle for that national debate to happen. We feel very blessed to be in this position to be telling this story, because we think it's a very, very important story, and in a sense, we feel very lucky and privileged to be a part of this story.
Well, Chris and Natasha, it's been great to talk to you, and break a leg tonight. When are you performing until?
Thank you. Saturday
25th.
Night. Yeah, that's
right,
our last
right
show.
Right there.
So we opened last night, and it was beautiful.
It was a terrific night in Darwin last night.
And it's a gorgeous garden up here.
Well, chukas for the rest of the season, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that's The First Garden. It's on until this Saturday at the George Brown Darwin Botanic Gardens, and there's a link to that on our website. Chris and Natasha Raja are the co-writers of the play, with Natasha playing the role of Olive Pink. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN.